The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. Welcome to Choosing Single Motherhood with your host, Mickey Morissette. Mickey is the choice mom of two and will discuss the best ways other choice moms can dedicate themselves to the lives of their children. Now, here's your host, Mickey Morissette.
Good afternoon and welcome to Choosing Single Motherhood. This is the radio show for single women who have reached a certain age without a partner and are determined to proactively become a mother on their own. I'm your host, Mickey Morissette, founder of Choice Moms and the ChoiceMoms.org website. Thank you for joining us. For today's show, I'm going to be talking with Dr. Peggy Drexler. She's the Assistant Professor of Psychology and Psychiatry at Cornell University Medical School, former gender scholar at Stanford University, and she's the author of the controversial book, Raising Boys Without Men, How Maverick Moms Are Creating the Next Generation of Exceptional Men. Later in the show today, we'll also hear from Rick Weisbord, a Harvard educator and author of The Parents We Mean to Be, How Well-Intentioned Adults Undermine Children's Moral and Emotional Development. We obviously hear so many bad things about single-parent homes. And in today's show, we're really going to talk about where really those judgments come from, what research tells us, such as that Dr. Drexler did, about the single parents who succeed and how they do it, and what is the background of the truly vulnerable children in today's society. If you're listening to the live version of the show, we will be taking callers from listeners later in the hour. When we reach that part of the show, the call-in number will be 1-866-472-5788. First, I'd like to welcome Dr. Peggy Drexler.
Thank you, Mickey. It's very nice to be here talking with you.
Yes, and, you know, your book has been out for a few years now, but it still makes the rounds on the Choice Moms discussion board.
That's good to hear.
It's, you know, one of the things for Choice Moms, we're very concerned before we become parents especially about how, in particular, if we're going to raise boys, how we can do that without having men in their life. And I know that was kind of the impetus for some of the research that you did a few years ago. So if I could ask you to just start off by talking a little bit about the kinds of the research that you did that led to your book.
Okay, first let me say that at the dawn of the new family, and I'm talking about single moms deciding to have children without having a man in their lives or in the children's lives, or let's say a man in the mother's bedroom, it was really a very new kind of situation that, you know, this children of gay and single mom families were not as prevalent in the culture. Now there's a reversal of tradition, and most of the world has come around. And so now I'm not running against the tide. But when I started this book, I was really not looking for symptom lists. In other words, what was going wrong. I just wanted to talk to people about their lives, just as this social dam began to crack. And clearly there's no road back. As long as there's family and freedom, and we cherish both, we're always striving to maintain a balance between them. So I went to the library, and there were no answers to what I was looking for. And essentially what I was interested in is how can children thrive in a home with one or two mothers, which was really not what we've been taught in school or in our culture. So I started the study with 16 two-mother couples, and 16 mom and dad couples raising sons, and initially in the first phase of the study, the boys were 5 to 9, and the participants lived in the San Francisco Bay Area, which was where I was based at the time. Mm-hmm. And I proceeded to meet these families on a biweekly basis over the course of 2 years. This was the first phase of my study, and this is when I was a gender scholar at Stanford. And then I became curious if what I had witnessed in the sons of the two mother households was also true of boys being raised by single mothers. So the next stage of my research involved intensively interviewing 30 single mothers by choice and 30 mothers who were single by circumstance, either widowed, separated, or divorced from all over the country. And then I compared them to the 16 traditional mom and dad families. So I had a big study here. Mm-hmm. And what I found, essentially, was that what we had thought about and heard and read was really not true, that single moms and two-mom families could really raise boys that were healthy and girls, but I focused on boys, but the same can be said of girls as well, mm-hmm. that these are kids that actually can benefit from being part of a single mom family, because these moms, and I call them maverick moms, that they manage to really take on both the male and female roles. And by when I say roles, I mean we all have masculine and feminine aspects to us, and mm-hmm. I believe that it's a continuum. And these moms were really in touch with both the masculine and feminine aspects to who they were, and really were able to impart these kinds of flexibilities with their kids so that they weren't locked into these standard gender roles. And I found that the boys were really more open, independent, and sensitive than their mainstream counterparts.
Mm-hmm. Now, of course, I know some of the reaction when the book came out, and certainly some of the thoughts people had, was that maybe you were coming into this with a bias as somebody that maybe had more of an affiliation with either lesbian or single-parent households, and that, of course, is not actually true. Can you give a little bit about your own family background?
Well, first let me say that the reaction was a volcano. Volcanic, shall I say.
Yes.
See, I got much, 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 and many, many hate calls, hate mail, from all over the country, mainly from men who felt that I was saying in some way that men weren't necessary, mm-hmm. And that in fact I and many divorced men who said that this would really alienate the courts in terms of their ability to have custody rights of their children. In fact, I was saying the opposite, but essentially, I am a woman who has been married to the same man for over 30 years. I have two children. One is grown. One is a teenager. And I had no preconceived bias going into this. I was interested, though, and I started with boys, is whether, in fact, in our culture, there's a strong bias against women raising boys. One is that popular opinion dictates that a mom is going to sissify a boy or undercut his masculinity without a man around. And two is that the boy is going to turn out to be gay, and that's going to be the mother. So, in terms of the mother's over-involvement. So, despite all the hate mail that I got, that I should take my dyke ass back to Europe where I belonged, and I was a commie, and I was anti-American, I really had no personal stake in the outcome at all.
Mm-hmm.
But as a gender scholar, I wondered, since women do raise children primarily, you know, why they were why there were so many feelings about mothers undermining their kids without fathers, when in fact many homes had situations where the father traveled, he wasn't around, came from divorce, and so forth, and it just didn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm. You know, and one of the things that you certainly talk about in the book and that you've been talking about a little bit here is that idea that having too much of a bond between mother and son, you know, as you said, could sissify them, smother love, emasculate them. Do you have a sense, especially as a research scholar, of, you know, where that comes from, why the thought might be that a man, a boy, can't really turn into a man if he doesn't have, if he has too close of a connection with his mother?
Well, I think there's two things. I mean, even growing up as a mother myself, I was concerned about that. There was a situation when I went to pick up my fourth grader. He was playing baseball, and he had all these rabbit feet on his belt for good luck, and he was in left field. He was not one of the star players, and I came, and he started waving at me from the field, and I ignored him because I felt that in some way I was undercutting him, you know, that he really should be out there macho playing the game, and that that was really what it was about, and the fact that he was laughing and smiling to his mother meant that he was less of a boy. So I really was inculcated with the whole thing as well. And in answer to your question, I think it came initially from Freud, who and psychological theory, which permeated the culture, and saw mothers as need satisfiers, and that it was up to the father in the, you know, when the boy was four or five to, in other words, take the boy, and the boy would change his identification from his mother to his father, and that this would be part of creating a masculine identity for him.
Mm-hmm.
We know that that doesn't make sense at this point, but we still believe it. And I think it goes back to this traditional idea that boys can only learn about masculine qualities from men. And that, you know, we're either male or female, and that it's a black or white situation, and that, you know, women have, as I say, it's really not about masculine or feminine qualities, it's about human qualities.
I'm going to interrupt you right there. We're going to take a short break.
Okay.
When we come back from the break, we're actually going to talk then in more detail about how to enhance the strengths of single-parent homes and what single mothers that you talked to were able to do with their sons.
Terrific.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
The Choice Mom community has benefited greatly from the wisdom of so many wonderful experts in fertility, adoption, donor insemination, and more. Growing since 1981, the Single Mothers by Choice organization has been offering women worldwide the opportunity to find local support groups. The Sperm Bank of California has been working with single women and lesbian couples to make the dream of family a reality since 1982. The American Fertility Association provides an enormous amount of educational resources about infertility prevention, reproductive health, and family building. The Donor Sibling Registry has been educating, connecting, and supporting donor families since 2000. The Choosing Single Motherhood radio show commends each of these nonprofit organizations for the invaluable work they do on behalf of non-traditional families.
The latest business information is made simple with the Voice America Business Network. The professionals in the business world bring you live talk radio shows featuring an array of business topics, strategies for building wealth, sales and marketing, stock trading, investing, and business technology. Voice America Business hosts are professionals in their fields and bring to the airwaves weekly business discussions that offer up-to-date information, advice, and education. The Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business talk.
Joe Cribbs, No Average Joe, is here for you, the fan, to hear about and discuss the week's top stories in the world of sports. We'll discuss not only the headliners, but you'll hear some of the smaller stories that don't usually make it on the sports wires today. It's a forum for the sports fan, hosted by Joe Cribbs, a three-time Pro Bowler with the Buffalo Bills. Joe is a 10-year pro football veteran, a former Southeastern Conference Most Valuable Player, and a member of the Alabama Sports Hall of Fame. Discuss the topics with Joe Cribbs, No Average Joe, Mondays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Sports Network.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in your brain inspired really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Choosing Single Motherhood with Mickey Morrissey. If you have a question or comment about the show today, please drop Mickey a line at info@choicemoms.org. That's info@choicemoms.org. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Choosing Single Motherhood. Today we have with us special guest Dr. Peggy Drexler, author of Raising Boys Without Men, How Maverick Moms Are Creating the Next Generation of Exceptional Men. And Peggy, that's really, you know, on the discussion board that I moderate, that's really one of the biggest things that women are concerned about as they take this step, or even after they've taken this step, and those little kids are turning into young boys and young teenagers, is how do we create the next generation of exceptional men? And I know in your book you had a one-on-one opportunities with so many women, choice moms as well as lesbian couples, who were indeed, it seemed, raising really strong boys. And could you sort of walk us through some of the really strong points that you saw, the things that people were putting in place that seemed to be creating really strong family bonds?
Well, you know, these women were older, and they had thought long and established, so they didn't have to contend with the effects of joblessness and poverty. And they really had put a lot of time and thought into how to raise their children. No situation was an accident, and I have a son now who's 31. But I have to say, Mickey, I learned a lot. And let me just go through some of the things that were pretty apparent. They really helped their sons to develop a strong sense of well-being and sensitivity to the needs and feelings of others. And they did this by talking. They talked not at their son, but they talked with them. They really treated their sons as worthy of respect and understanding, and in turn the boys learned to respect themselves and empathize with others. And so they put a lot of emphasis on helping their sons to figure out how he felt, whether the feeling was good or bad, and what was making him feel that way. So in talking about his feelings, he was able to connect to others in a way that would have been more difficult if that hadn't been an emphasis. And some of I hate to call them tricks, but what seemed to work and what they developed is boys tend to shy away from face-to-face discussions. Girls can too. I have a teenager at home, and, you know, what'd you do? Nothing. how was your day? Great. But what they did is very creatively they connected with their sons in any way they could, on the terms, not sitting down at a table and peppering them with questions, but they used toys to prompt discussion. One mom used puppets with her young son. Mm. Conversations were initiated in the car or on the basketball court. These moms went out of their way, out of their own comfort zone, to connect with their sons in ways that their sons could engage in relationships comfortably. So one mom, dead tired at the end of the day, but was playing basketball with her teenage son because he seemed withdrawn. And she expected it to be a bore, you know, and she was exhausted, but she found that her son opened up and was sharing thoughts and feelings. And so that was a real bonding experience. I found that these moms also listened carefully to what the son said and didn't say, to the silences and to the outbursts, and gave their sons adaptive measures to function in the world. One 10-year-old boy, his name was Caleb. Obviously, these names have been changed, but we'll call him Caleb. And he struggled with being small for his age. And when and it really eroded his self-esteem. So he and his mom sat down and brainstormed about the advantages of being a small person. Like in hide-and-seek, you could find a really good place to hide. People mm-hmm. underestimated his athletic abilities. So he had a secret weapon, in a sense. Mm-hmm. So when his cousin said he was small for his age, Caleb was able to go into his self-repertoire and list all the good things about being small. So there was really a very intense sensitivity that they fostered. They also fostered respect for others, that it was very important that that they modeled what they felt these boys should do in the outside world. So they had expectations to live up to. They were responsible for their share of the household chores and other age-appropriate activities. Which was very important, that they were part of a family, and as such they had these responsibilities, and that developed self-confidence as well, mm-hmm. and how they should behave as family members in a sensitive, reflective way, so that these boys really understood how to treat one another. The other thing they did, and I'm talking about boys now, but they were able to reach out. Right from the beginning, they thought about finding role models for boys. And I believe very strongly that we live in a world of boys and girls, and young boys do look up to and want to have men in their lives to look up to emulate, to learn from. And so they really went out of their way in advance to find these men who would be ongoing presence in their son's lives, so that he could learn patience by seeing that in somebody else. Also, obviously they could see that in their mom too, but it was good to see it in a man. You know, they picked qualities that were important, both for boys, but for important to them in terms of how their boys were going to turn out. And they also modeled them themselves. You know, women are strong and heroic and have power and leadership and determination. These are qualities we think of as male qualities, but they're not. And so they set examples for their sons as well. And in doing so, helped to erase these culturally ingrained gender stereotypes. And why that's important, Mickey, for two reasons. One is that if you have a wider repertoire of how you can behave and what you think, you're going to be a richer kind of person. They've done research that boys who are at one end of a gender continuum, rigidly locked in, are the boys who drink, who drop out of school, who tend to do drugs early. And conversely, girls on the other end are the ones low self-esteem, don't do well in school, tend to get pregnant very early. That the more flexibility we have as human beings, the healthier we are. Mm-hmm. And what was interesting to me is that these boys had role models and they could pick and choose. They didn't have to, you know, if there's one father in the home and the father is not a father to emulate, as a lot of fathers are, some are wonderful, but some are not, these boys had a whole range of men, so they could actually pick and choose qualities that they found appealing and reject aspects of men in their lives that they didn't find appealing.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things that I hear from some women, especially before they're moms, because again, I think actually after you're a mom, some of this happens so much more naturally than when you're just thinking about it and analyzing it. And one of them is one thing that women are concerned about in developing their support network and finding male role models is that concern that, well, my father's dead, I don't have a brother or whatever, and being able to think creatively about where those role models come from. Where were women that you talked to, and where were the boys finding strong role models?
Well, they found them, the family went out, interesting, because I compared them to two parent mom and dad families, too.
Yep. Yep.
And the role models in the mom, initially when I did the statistical analysis, the boys in the mom and dad families had more role models, but it was one role model, the father. As I got to talk to them, I realized that the boys in the two mom families had more. The family was much more proactive, and I would say this with the single moms also, the single moms by choice. The families were much more active in looking for babysitters, tutors, coaches, big brothers. And the interesting thing that I found is that the boys developed their own internal models. They rolled their own role models. So they took qualities of heroes, of fictional characters like Harry Potter. One boy loved Jim Davis, the creator of Garfield. Mm-hmm. And they were able to use these as an amalgam of male qualities that they were able to internalize. And so it comes from many sources, both internal and external. I do think that all boys, whether they're in any kind of family situation, do take in characters that they see on television or sports heroes. But really what this said to me is that boys are not at risk if there is not one male or even a few males continuously in their lives, because as a part of a natural process, they take in all these different kinds of male representatives in the culture. Mm-hmm. So it happens naturally.
Okay. Well, we're going to stop here for a few minutes and take a short break.
Okay.
You're listening to Choosing Single Motherhood with Mickey Morissette and special guest Dr. Peggy Drexler, author of Raising Boys Without Men. And when we come back from the break, we're going to hear part of an interview I did for the Choice Chat podcast with Rick Weisbord, who's an educator from Harvard. And we talked about how we are failing today's children and what we can do about it.
News, opinion,
can you hear me?
Your voice counts. Call toll-free 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787. VoiceAmerica.com.
The Choice Mom community has benefited greatly from the wisdom of so many wonderful experts in fertility, adoption, donor insemination, and more. Growing since 1981, the Single Mothers by Choice organization has been offering women worldwide the opportunity to find local support groups. The Sperm Bank of California has been working with single women and lesbian couples to make the dream of family a reality since 1982. The American Fertility Association provides an enormous amount of educational resources about infertility prevention, reproductive health, and family building. The Donor Sibling Registry has been educating, connecting, and supporting donor families since 2000. The Choosing Single Motherhood radio show commends each of these nonprofit organizations for the invaluable work they do on behalf of non-traditional families.
When I found out my jeans were made using child labor in sweatshops, I wrote a letter to the company saying, reconsider your labor practices. A few months later, I get a letter back saying, thanks for being a loyal customer, and they included a coupon for a 25% discount on their jeans. So I got smart, wrote letters every day to all the stores that carry the brand, asking them to stop supporting the companies who use child labor in sweatshops. And I just kept getting letters back, thanking me for my concerns, and more coupons for more discounts on more jeans. So I'm telling my friend about it, and she flips out, saying that between all the letters and coupons, some paper company cut down a small forest, driving off two indigenous tribes, hundreds of endangered animals, killing thousands of plant species, some of which may have contained vaccines for HIV, cancer, and syphilis. Meanwhile, the guys cutting down the trees are 13-year-old kids who work night and day for months just to save up enough money to buy a pair of jeans made by child labor in sweatshops.
Saving the world isn't easy, but saving a life is. Just one pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Visit bloodsaves.com to learn more. This public service announcement was brought to you by the Ad Council.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Choosing Single Motherhood with Mickey Morrissette. If you have a question or comment about the show today, please drop Mickey a line at info@choicemoms.org. That's info@choicemoms.org. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Choosing Single Motherhood with Mickey Morrissette, the radio show for women who proactively choose to become single mothers. As we've been talking about on today's show, one very common concern that single women face when they decide whether to become a parent on their own is how it will impact a child to grow up without a father. In this segment, we feature an interesting conversation I had recently with Harvard educator Rick Weisbord, author of the highly regarded book, The Parents We Mean to Be, How Well-Intentioned Adults Undermine Children's Moral and Emotional Development. Several years ago, when I was researching my book, Choosing Single Motherhood, specifically the chapter about how kids are affected when they are raised without a father, I became familiar with the research and writing of Rick, who teaches at Harvard University's Graduate School of Education and Kennedy School of Government. Dr. Weisbord has founded several Boston-based intervention programs designed to help at-risk kids. His initiatives are designed to promote social, emotional, and moral development in children and teens. He has been a family policy and school reform advisor at the city, state, and federal levels. In his work, Rick has gained an inside look at who some of our most vulnerable kids actually are and what they are missing from their home and community environments. Some of his findings might be surprising. He understands the stresses of single-parent households, particularly those affected by divorce, and has unique insight to offer all of us. His very interesting book, The Vulnerable Child, What Really Hurts America's Children and What We Can Do About It, was published in 1996 and was the first one I read. His latest book was reviewed in The New Yorker, which said, "In this ardent and persuasive inquiry, Weisbord, a Harvard psychologist, warns that happiness-besotted parents do children a disservice by emphasizing personal fulfillment over empathy. Parents worry about their children's confidence, but constant preemptive praise can turn kids into cynics. Studies show that playground bullies, and later in life, criminals, exhibit high self-esteem." Drawing on extensive field research, Weisbord makes the case that parents, as models of behavior, must be vigilant about their own moral choices. So Rick always has a unique research-based perspective to offer about what kids need in order to grow up whole. We talked about the ways that kids can be impacted by single parenting, based on what he's discovered in his research over the years.
There are really two realities about single parenthood. One reality is that it is harder to raise kids in a single parent family. And a lot of it has to do with poverty. A lot of it has to do with isolation. A lot of it has to do with the stresses and burdens of raising kids alone and not being able to think collectively with another mature adult about challenges and problems. So, you know, if you look at single parenthood in isolation, kids in single parent homes tend on average not to do as well as kids in two-parent homes. But it's an extremely complicated question. And the other reality is that lots of kids in single-parent families do very well. You know, I think the most important thing for kids is having a healthy, mature adult who really knows how to love you and really knows how to appreciate you and knows how to care for you. And there are obviously a lot of single mothers who are quite capable of being caring, appreciative, loving, responsible parents. And you always have to ask this question, how will those single mothers have been doing had they been raising kids with a father who they had an antagonistic or difficult relationship with? Because most of those single mothers, that's really what the alternative would have been. I mean, they're getting divorced or they're raising kids alone because they don't feel like there's a man that they can be an effective partner with. And that's not a good situation for kids either. So it's there are these two realities, and it's complicated in those ways.
In 2002, Rick wrote a compelling essay in the American Prospect titled Moral Parent, Moral Child. In it, he wrote, "A mountain of research now shows that it is the content of adult-child interactions, not the structure of families, that most strongly determines the shape of children's ethical development. That's what makes parenting a profoundly moral act, and learning to parent well a profound moral achievement." We talked about how the family structure focus tends to oversimplify the essential issues facing our children today.
There's just been a lot of platitudes and cliches about this, about the effects of single parenthood on kids. And usually, you know, when I interview kids in single parent homes, you know, and I interview kids who've gone through divorce and lost their dads, they're very complicated stories. I mean, some of these kids are more vulnerable in certain ways because of a divorce, for example, but stronger in other ways because of a divorce. Sometimes these kids, in very good ways, become more mature as a result of a divorce and are protected from a parent who has been destructive in one way. And they can do well in certain stages of life and then badly in another stage of life and then well again in another stage, depending on how the divorce is handled, depending on how they react to it and understand it over time. So all these cases, there's a complex story, and it's important to really understand the complex story.
Based on findings from Rick's new book, we talked about what he has learned about the stereotypes and misperceptions about family values.
You know, we tend to think of immigrant kids especially. You know, there's conservatives have concerns about immigrant kids undermining family values and immigrant kids being detrimental to our culture in all kinds of ways. But one of the things that you find if you look at the data about immigrant kids is that first-generation immigrant kids are, you know, doing better than American kids on almost every emotional and moral measure that we have. The kids are undermining American culture. It's an American culture is, in many cases, undermining the strengths of American kids. And, you know, there are a lot of strengths in African-American communities, you know, lots of stereotypes, negative stereotypes about African-American communities, but there's a lot of data that African-American kids have many social, emotional, and moral strengths that go unrecognized, that get buried in these stereotypes. Same is true for low-income kids. And, you know, I'm emphasizing both moral strengths and emotional strengths. African-American kids, despite discrimination, have as high or higher self-esteem on almost every measure of self-esteem that we have. So, again, there's something, things that are going very well, very positive in communities that we tend to look at through, you know, negative media images and stereotypes and that obscure these strengths.
I asked Rick what every parent needs to know about raising their child to be a moral, responsible human being.
This is a good question. You know, I think there are a number of different ways to think about morality. It's what makes the question a difficult one. Certainly, if you want to raise a moral child, you have to model morality yourself, but it's not just about modeling morality or integrity. It's about helping kids with moral reasoning. It's about helping kids manage the emotions that underlie morality. You know, most kids, a vast majority of kids that I interviewed know what right and wrong is. Problem is, they have trouble doing what's right in certain situations. You know, they know that they should stick up for a friend, but they're under a lot of peer pressure. Or they know that they shouldn't steal a cell phone from another friend, but they're very envious of the person with the cell phone. They know at times that they should snitch on other kids, but the punishment for snitching, the internal punishment for snitching, the kind of self-criticism that they would go through for snitching, let alone the external punishment, is so great that they won't do it. And so the challenge is, in a lot of ways, helping kids manage these emotions, helping kids manage the fear of disapproval, manage envy, manage shame. That's a big part of what it means for a parent to raise a moral child. I also think we're very focused on moral literacy, you know, again, on helping kids know what's right and wrong, and not enough on moral motivation or moral identity, on having kids really internalize values like caring and respect and responsibility. If we want kids to really internalize these values, we have to instill the habits of caring for others and help them register in the outside world acts of unfairness and injustice from an early age. These things have to become reflex. And I think a lot of parents are so focused on their kids' happiness and achievement that often they're not really doing the very deliberate cultivation of these moral qualities that you need to do.
One of the ways Rick contributed greatly to my original book was in offering comments about how all of us can raise well-balanced children. I asked him now, with what he learned in research for his new book, if there was anything he wanted to add to that insight.
A lot of the key to raising a moral child is not in what you do so much as in what you don't do. And what I mean by that is, as I suggested, you know, I think this is a theme of the book, that a lot of parents are so focused on their kids' achievement and happiness and being close to their kids and their kids being perfect in some ways, that those things get priority rather than, you know, giving priority to their kids really attending to other people and organizing themselves around other people sometimes really becomes the priority. It's going to be hard for a lot of kids to have some of the moral qualities we like them to have.
We're going to stop here for a few minutes and take a short break. You're listening to Choosing Single Motherhood with Mickey Morissette. We've been hearing from Rick Weisbord, author of the new book, The Parents We Mean to Be, How Adults Nurture and Undermine Children's Moral and Emotional Development. When we return, we'll answer calls from listeners. The number you should call now is 1-866-472-5788.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your questions. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
The Choice Mom community has benefited greatly from the wisdom of so many wonderful experts in fertility, adoption, donor insemination, and more. Growing since 1981, the Single Mothers by Choice organization has been offering women worldwide the opportunity to find local support groups. The Sperm Bank of California has been working with single women and lesbian couples to make the dream of family a reality since 1982. The American Fertility Association provides an enormous amount of educational resources about infertility prevention, reproductive health, and family building. The Donor Sibling Registry has been educating, connecting, and supporting donor families since 2000. The Choosing Single Motherhood radio show commends each of these nonprofit organizations for the invaluable work they do on behalf of non-traditional families.
When your car starts to gasp and sputter, you take it in for a tune-up. But what about when you get tired and need help? Sounds like it's time for a life tune-up. Simple, straightforward advice and techniques to help inspire and guide you in weathering life's challenges and finding your true purpose. Each week, Lauren and Shore Slocum will give you the tools to tune up your life in a way that's easy and fun. Stop making excuses and live your life. Tune in to Life Tune-Ups, Thursdays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Variety Channel, and tune up your life today.
If you can't put down a good mystery novel, you'll want to check out Mystery Matters with Fran Stewart. Each week, you'll hear from the top mystery writers of our time. From suspense thrillers to forensics, you'll explore all of the categories that make a great mystery work. Not only will we discuss the secrets of the story, but we'll go behind the novel to sort out all of the pieces of the puzzle. Broadcast live each Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America. Mystery Matters, where murder is an open book.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Choosing Single Motherhood with Mickey Morrissette. If you have a question or comment about the show today, please drop Mickey a line at info@choicemoms.org. That's info@choicemoms.org. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Choosing Single Motherhood with Mickey Morrissette. This is the radio show for single women who proactively decide to pursue their goal of motherhood despite the lack of an appropriate partner in their life. In this segment, we'll be able to answer questions from listeners. If you'd like to call in now, the number is 1-866-472-5788. In the meantime, we're back with Peggy Drexler, author of Raising Boys Without Men. And I do have a couple questions that have been written in, and I'm going to start with the big one. I received this email from someone who hits exactly on the typical concern that the choice mom community faces, from some who very strongly believe that the decision to build a family without a father is selfish from the child's perspective. So I'd like to read this comment to you now and get your reaction. The writer says, the most common thing gang members share is the absence of a father. This is true of teen girl runaways. This is also true of boys dropping out of high school. This is true of boys on probation and in jail. Girls feel a void not having a father. When their first boyfriend comes around, they are so happy they have sex often and with many boys. Why should it be any different if the mom decides to be a single mom? Will all this trouble disappear simply because she chooses to have it disappear? So,
well, let me say first that as a research psychologist, I know that if you torture statistics long enough, they're going to confess to anything. But there are studies that say that children do better in a standard mom and dad family, and standard is the operative word there, because there are many, many families, children of divorce, children of single moms by choice, children who actually live in single parent families and do fine. I tell you what I think is the real problem, Mickey, is the long-held notions that female-only parenting is deficient. I think that's is underlying this question, that it's inadequate, that it's broken or flawed. The social science data show that socioeconomic status is a stronger predictor than most of any other index of child welfare, not marriage status, not the number of parents in the home, or their gender, for that matter. So it really, you know, we look to single mothers as the cause of some of these problems, but we don't really look at socioeconomic status. Do they have health insurance? Is there enough money for a good education, for after-school activities, for you know, the kinds of opportunities that middle and upper middle class children get? Mm-hmm. So I think that what we conflate these socioeconomic factors and say that it's single mothers, mm-hmm. families that are causing these kinds of problems. And I do think that social scientists confuse family structure with economic factors that can influence behavior. So this the alarming statistics, which maybe this person is referring to, which says that there's a crisis, are rarely broken out by race or class. It really, really has to do with a compilation of statistics And let me give you an example. In general, when it comes to academic achievement, race and class prevail. So the Urban Institute reports that 76% of students who live in middle to upper middle income areas are likely to graduate from high school. Now, they're not talking about marital status. They're not talking about number of people in the home. They're just talking about class here, race and class, okay? Mm-hmm. 56% of students who live in lower income areas are likely to do so. So that goes down from 76 to 56% based on class and race. Florida, for instance, graduation rates among all students show a striking picture of class and race. So 81% graduate for Asians, 60% for whites, 48% for Hispanics, and 46% for blacks. Mm-hmm. So, again, it goes back to the single mother when, in fact, there are so many other factors that influence how children will do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my feeling is that it really is about connection. It's about attachment. It's about the quality of parenting. Mm-hmm. There's been some very interesting research, and a good book that I would recommend to your audience. It's called The Surprising Power of Family Meals by Miriam Weinstein. Mm-hmm. And basically what they found is that the family meal is so important and powerful with children. The children get to sit down with one parent and discuss their day and have some family time, and it doesn't really matter what the gender of the parent is, the sexual orientation, or the number of parents. Mm. So when you take all these statistics together, it shows one picture, but it's really, really not the whole picture or even part of the picture. There's another way to look at this, and I don't know if you're familiar with these statistics, but, you know, women, they used to call them women who got pregnant out of marriage, that the kids did not do as well, and I think this listener is referring to that. But what they lumped the 17-year-old girl who got pregnant with no social supports, had no way to care for her baby, with the middle-class woman who was established, who had been working, who had been, you know, had all kinds of supports for her child. So, you know, you lump all these statistics together, and it looks like it's the mother who's not married across the board whose kids are having problems, but when you really tease it out, it's a whole different story.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, one of the other things that comes up a lot in the community, and we don't have too long to get to the answer for this, but I did want to touch on it with you, is whether kids feel a sense of loss. You know, especially, I mean, Father's Day is coming up, and one of the fears also is that kids who don't have a father in the home, it might be that they can do well, but do they have a sense of loss? And if you could, you know, the kids that you talk to, the boys that you talk to, did you get a sense of that from a lot of the boys that you've known?
Mickey, we all have holes to fill. You know, who doesn't have something in their life which could have been filled, could have been better, whether it's through divorce, whether it's the father who's traveling all the time, whether it's the kid who's left with the nanny. You know, yeah, there are areas of loss, but that doesn't have to be predictive of any kind of problem in the future. It really is part of the human condition. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these boys that I met with would have liked the father, but not at the expense of giving up their two moms. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we live in a culture with male and female, and wouldn't it be nice to have all the people, you know, around you that you can, who can love you? But it doesn't mean that it's predictive of outcome in terms of how children will do in school and in later life. So a lot of mothers felt, I mean, even as you asked the question, there was some guilt. Have I done right by my kids? But as I say, you know, with the rate of divorce, I don't know if you're familiar with Judy Wallerstein's work, but often after the divorce, the father is out of the home, doesn't have contact. So many families now, and I can give you some statistics too, where it's become more the norm. that there's one or two parents in the home. So sure, we have fantasies, and these boys did have fantasies and wishes. But what I found was really what the operative quality in the mother was, that they were allowed to talk about these qualities, these things that they missed and what it would be like, and so that it wasn't anything to be ashamed of, and the mother didn't feel so guilty that she had to sweep it under the rug. Mm-hmm. That this was part of their experience, who they were, and what their feelings were. And it really didn't have to do with deprivation.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Peggy. That's actually all we have time for today.
Okay. Well, I enjoyed this, Mickey, and I think you're on a good track, so keep on going.
Very good. Thank you very much. And do you have a website, by the way?
Yes. It's www.peggydrexler.com.
Great. Thank you, Peggy. And
thank
in the
you.
Meantime, for listeners, I want to thank you for listening to this episode of Choosing Single Motherhood, the radio show for single women who are determined to proactively become a mother on their own. I'm your host, Mickey Morissette, founder of Choice Moms and the ChoiceMoms.org website. I look forward to talking with you again next week. As always, welcome to the discussion and welcome to the journey.
We hope you enjoyed our discussion this week on Choosing Single Motherhood with Mickey Morissette. For more wisdom and thought, please join us again next Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern, here on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.